a little, and they'd go around and they, it would.
Testing. This is an interview for the Brickyard Workers Oral History Project at Museum LA. The date is October 3rd, 2008. I'm Andrea Lumgia, and today I'm interviewing Dennis Chamberlain.
Correct.
And Dennis, could you tell me your date and place of birth?
Born here in Lewiston, 11-28-55.
And did you grow up here as
well? Yeah. Been here all my life.
And your parents, what were their names?
Lorette, my mom, and my father was David Chamberlain.
And what did he do for work?
Oh, in the summertime, he used to work at a brickyard. And in the wintertime, he used to work in the woods with his brothers. So that's what he's done. He did that a lot of years.
Yeah.
I remember, well, I was born in 55. I remember the 60s, him doing it. And with my uncles and stuff like that.
Yeah, and in the brickyards, which brickyards did he work?
He worked at Morin. He worked a little bit at Dennis Brick, and he owned his own for a while.
He did?
Yeah, with another person.
And where was that?
In Sydney, right outside Augusta, Maine.
Okay.
That's when I remember, like I said, that was in the 60s. I remember some of that. Next, I worked a little bit at Morin later on, just part-time. But
it's the Sydney experience, yeah. You remember. Can you talk about that?
Well, it was like, they used to have a press or whatever to make the bricks. There used to be a guy in the back in his swim trunks or whatever. Would shovel it into the press, and there'd be a guy that would, like, jump on, looks like a giant step or whatever. It looks like a step.
Yeah.
He would jump on 1 foot, the clay would come down, press into the molds, and these guys would pick up the molds, put them on, look like a wheelbarrow, but they had no sides, just a wheelbarrow. And they'd go down the yard, flip the molds, put them in the yard, and come back, get another load. And there'd be guys doing that all the way through the day.
And what part did your dad do?
Well, he was a supervisor because he's the owner, so he made sure everything was running right, everything was up and up, make sure there was no problem with the guys and stuff like that, and just maintenance and refereeing and whatever he had to do.
Right, and I don't know if you would remember this being a child at the time, but how did he come to, I don't know, discover the clay in Sydney, or did he own the land? Or
well, it was a former brickyard that had shut down.
Okay.
So they had found out about it, so him and another individual went and checked it out, and they bought it. And they started, it was a small, they didn't make that many bricks there, but they weren't that many employees, so they wanted to keep it small and manageable. And they had big fields where they used to cut up the clay, let it dry, bring it into the pit, where that pit would, they would put that mud the night before, let it soak before they would use it for the next day. So that's how it was. It was just a big field, large field, and it sat down like a lower area. And that's how they did it.
Right. And did you see them building the kilns?
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Do you know the process?
Well, it's like we used to call those guys setters. When the bricks used to come down the conveyor belt, they used to grab the bricks by four. They would just stack them, and they would have like a first layer, which was the most important layer, where they would shape the arches. Those arches were made, so when they threw the wood in there, that's why they got the fire to burn the brick. See, the brick is made with a lot of heat, I'll tell you that. And once that first section was made, after that they just came up square all the way up and leveled it. Next they come in, they used to call it, I think, scoving. They used to put like an outside brick layer all the way around it. Next day, mud it and be ready to be burned.
And how long did that process take? A couple weeks, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it got better in time when oil came in, whatever. But the old ways used to be the wood slabs. They used to get them in a big bundle. They used to buy them from, I don't know what area. They used to come in on a truck, these great big bundles of slab. They just used to put it all the way the length of the kiln. These slabs are probably about 3 or 4 feet high. And they left room. Because once you, I think the slabs were like 4 feet long. They had to leave room for you to grab it to throw it in. Next, you used to have long poles and push them all the way in. And that's how they did it. And they used to be a guy they called him the burner, and there was his helpers. He used to go up top, see if everything was looking right, because he could see if it was too enough heat, not enough heat, how much air he would give it. You know what I mean? These guys did it for a long time. A lot of those guys were old guys that were doing it. I remember working with them. And they were pretty good. They used to have a brick. They used to pull out. They used to look inside the hole to see if the fire was all right, put the brick back in. and let her do it. And they go out and check and just wait and wait and get another load of wood every now and then. And that's how the process was around the clock till it was done. Wow. They had three shifts.
And it must have been hot going up to the top to look.
Well, they used to have like look like outside staging all the way around it. So they used to climb up and look at it through the staging. They got a pretty good idea after doing all these years, what if it looked right or wrong. And if they needed more heat or more air, they used to come back and either stoke more wood or give a little more air. And that was it. And they did this process. Like I say, it was around the clock, 7 days a week till it was done.
Did your dad have stories that he told about working in the brickyard?
That was a tough guy's job. I mean, you know, a lot of these guys, it was hard work. I mean, you couldn't take that away. And I guess stories, wow, that'd be hard to remember. I'm trying to think.
Yeah. Sometimes they're hard to pull out after all these years.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of stuff you talk in passing, you know, some of the guys and things that go wrong. Sometimes they screw up. Boy, they would have a mess if they burned the kiln bad. They would have literally have to take masonry hammers and take it all apart.
No.
If you burned it too long. The next, you know, they wouldn't be too happy with that, but somebody else would buy that. They used to call those antiques. They were odd shaped. They were also like glass sometimes. They were unique, but they were hardware for masons to put up, but they had a niche for that too. People liked it because they were so unique, but they were a lot of work to get out.
And so your dad worked in the woods in the winter.
Winter, yeah, because, you know, brick making was only in the summertime, and they'd do whatever they could till the season got a little too cold because it would freeze, I mean, the water and all that, just put the bricks. So when it came to that part, what they would do was just take care of everything that was dry, burn it, and they would shut down for the winter. Next start up, soon spring came, all the crews come back, whatever they did in the winter time, and they start all over again.
And you said your dad went to part-time later on, working in the brickyard?
Yeah, he did. He retired, but he still used to come in as he was older to fix the moles and all that, because they get damaged. I mean, they get twisted and dropped or whatever, and he would repair them, you know what I mean? Because he knew how to, he had a little system of how to repair them, so he was pretty good at it. So they would just hire him probably 15, 20 hours after retirement just to repair them and stuff like that. And it would save them a lot because the moles alone probably cost $50 to $100 one set.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can fix them in an hour or two, and you didn't have to wait.
Right.
So that was the most important thing.
And was that at Morin?
Yeah, he worked there quite a few years.
Yeah.
A lot of years. That's what I remember most. After he left that, eventually that shut down to Cindy, and he moved back here, and he ended up working at Morin for quite a few years after that. I would say from the 70s on, later 70s on. Yeah, that's where he retired.
Now, did you ever work in a brickyard?
Yeah, I worked a little bit part-time. Yeah, I remember that. I worked at Morin when I got out of high school for a year or two. And it was a little different then. I mean, a little more mechanical with forklifts and...
You know. Can you talk about how it changed, what the differences
were? Oh, it was just the machinery. I mean,
yeah.
No more guy shoveling. It's all augers, and you had a bucket loader that would just dump in the back in a hopper, and the auger would come in. There'd be a guy on top watering it. It'd come out of the press. The guy would just hit the button. The press would dump. Was it a button? I think so. It would dump, fill the moles. Next, you would just flip it on a conveyor belt, and it would go down these, like, little, like, two cables going down, and guys would just pick them and put them in the racks. And after the rack was full, the forklift would come in, pick up the rack, and put it up in, like, a big shed, let them dry. Before the old days, they just let it on the ground and dry. I mean, you know,
right.
So there was no covering on them. At least when they were in the sheds, they were covered away from the elements and stuff.
Right, so you didn't lose bricks if
you
it
got
rained.
It. You got it. Because, you know, every now and then, you did have a storm. It would just dent the heck out of it.
Yeah.
They were no good after that.
Yeah.
They have to get rid of them. But that's the change. And like I say, the kills, everything was conveyor belt. The guys, setting was still, that. I would say that probably one of the hottest jobs those guys did. It was all back bend. They would grab it, bend over, set, grab it, bend over, set. And, you know, if you had a set of, there used to be two guys doing it, and they were pretty good. They could probably do 40,000 bricks in a day, setting. So
yeah.
I think so, if I remember right. They were pretty good. They couldn't get up there. Then the number might be off because I remember we used to go, they used to do like a level here, like staggered the level, and eventually would fill it out. And they'd go all the way up and come back down. And like I say, the hardest part was the arches. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter, everybody had to do the arches right, because, you know, next came oil, and some would still use oil and wood to get certain colors of the brick. Because, like, they try and match with what's existing before. That was a big thing with brick. I mean, if it stayed the same, a lot of, like, schools and stuff like that like the particular color bricks, the style of brick. So they try to keep to that level or maintain, I guess.
Right.
So if there was, like, a hospital building, based college that bought a lot of bricks from them and stuff, they try to keep it the same.
Yeah.
But now everything's different. Everything's wire cut. It's all automated. So it's different. I mean, it takes less people. I mean, that's the big thing.
Yeah.
It's because it was rugged work. A lot of guys just get hurt, sore backs, bang hands, stuff like that, dried, chipped, you name it.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about the brick making that you think is important to add?
Not really. I think if you have talked to everybody else, pretty much, like I said, there ain't too many left. I think Morin's probably the only one around here. And after that, Gorham. So there's not many left. And it does. It takes a lot of room. There's a lot of, you know, you get a lot of breakage. I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, you know, if you get stones in it, whatever, that will break it, like rocks, stuff like that. And then too much heat, not enough heat, and little things like that. So there's a lot of, I would say, not, what we used to call it, not broken bricks, but they used to have a name for it. And you used to have a lot of that in the drying process and in the finish process, too.
Yeah.
You just dealing with clay, it can do anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way it dries, if it dries too quick, you don't want anything to dry too quick, it cracks. If it took too long to dry, it'd just be more area that you would have to store it until it finally dries. So it's kind of tricky sometimes.
Yeah. And I know when we first walked in, Rachel had mentioned that your dad had come in to help with the setup of a display. Do you know what she was talking about?
No, I don't know where she got it. She says it's an old style one with the horses.
Yeah, I'm not sure about
it. I have no idea. Although I remember, the ones I remember was the guys used to be in the pits. And they used to shovel, and like I say, a guy would hit like a big pedal. You'd jump on the pedal, and that would bring the press down, and that would fill the mold.
Yeah.
And those guys would go down and down the yard and dump it. Like I say, it was a pretty bag-busting job. I mean, everything was with your back. I mean, those guys were pretty rugged.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, they're all pretty rugged.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
You take care. Have a good one.